Film Vault.
Yes, Film Vault. Welcome, everyone, to the Film Vault. That's Anderson.
Hey.
I'm Brian Bishop, your host. For today, top five movies that influenced our relationships. Top five films that influenced our relationships. This is a listener top five. A listener suggestion. Do you have the name in front of you?
Diana Rochick.
Is that who it is?
Yes.
I think the person tweeted me today. Thanks, Diana, for saying you're the one who gave us the idea. It's a very outside-the-box idea. We'd never even consider this as a topic.
It came up during a chat with Andy. And,
interesting.
She asked me kind of point blank, and then I started throughout the call. I thought of a few, and I've forgotten one of the picks that I came up with while I was on the phone with her. But I have a solid list nonetheless.
But wait, you record the conversations?
Yeah, I know. And what do you call it? That Murphy in his law.
The one time
because we were having issues with getting her in a good cell site, and once we finally found a place, mm-hmm. which was on the handset. We decided not to forego the recording. There's only been two that I didn't get recordings for out of close to 50. And, that was one of them.
Jennifer, so, crank me
Diana
up.
Diana is her name. Diana.
Crank. I can't even hear you. Crank me up. Crank me up. Logan, give me some juice. Give me some juice. Yeah, there you go. A little more. That's mm-hmm. good. Mm-hmm. Oh, feeling good. Very controversial top five today, Anderson. I'll say straight up. I had a lot of trouble with this one.
Let me ask you another question.
A lot of trouble.
Did you get infused today?
No infusion.
It's feeling like you got infused.
The last half hour was frantic. I was racing to get Tessa, pick her up, and before the show had to start. So mm-hmm. I'm here. I'm queer.
Pick her up, drop her off, and now here you are.
And here I are. This top five I had trouble with. I was daunting. I was not prepared. I felt like this was like an exercise. Like I had to stretch. Use muscles I don't normally use.
Oh, well, that's every week for you, isn't it?
Yeah, thinking about movies. Think about movies that influence me or impact me in some way. Mm-hmm. So I went over the 12 movies I've seen before, and I was able to pull five.
Okay, cool.
There will be controversy, Anderson.
Why is this, Brian? Why is there going to be controversy?
You'll see. There will be controversy.
Okay.
Any crossover?
Why would you present it to me that way? I don't like that.
Any crossover?
Yeah, there might be none. Let's go with that. I'm hoping there's none.
Yeah, crossover set at 0.5, and I'm going under.
This week, this topic, too, is going to show my duality, Brian, the duality of my personality here, where you'll see, why would you let that influence you? What a horrible prick. To like, what a soft little bitch you are. Yeah. Wow. We're going to go run the gamut,
Brian. We're going to vacillate wildly.
And I'm going to be bearing it all, and I will not be looking back. I will just be looking forward. Once this episode's over, I will feel good. I will have bared my soul, and I want to move on to the next topic.
Cleanse, move on.
I want to be done. Yes, because it is embarrassing at times.
Did all the movies influence relationships? Like romantic relationships? Are there some relationships with your son? Some with
No,
dogs,
I went all with relationships. Better. Yeah, all with the ladies.
I agree. Me too.
If I was gay, it'd be all with the guys.
But you're not, so you didn't.
So I didn't do that, no. But, that could have fallen in. Like if there was Brokeback Mountain, and I really just
made you really reevaluate.
Not about my sexual proclivity, but about the relationship. I mean, I don't see dick or vagina, Brian. I just see people who love. You know what I mean?
You are two for two in consecutive weeks with hugely pretentious statements. Your best was, Dunkirk's not meant to be enjoyed. It's meant to be experienced.
It's true. Dunkirk was not meant to be enjoyed, Brian. It was meant to be experienced.
It's very good.
I saw Logan sent me a text. A listener, I guess that's his new pickup line.
Who's now. Logan?
A listener let us know that his new pickup line is, my dick is not meant to be enjoyed. It's meant to be experienced.
It's good.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
All right.
Hey, how's a long time no talk? How's Groupers coming? What's the latest?
Slow and steady. Cuts
you're still
in.
Getting edited.
Please don't touch that because then it makes it a crackly, and I'm hoping that's not making it to the recording. But
is this being exported to Chicago?
What's that?
Is it being exported?
It's already at X. It's in Chicago. It's been in Chicago.
Piece by piece, it was getting.
No. I sent them the actual physical drives with all 15 terabytes of information of the film, and I'm starting to get. Mike is sending. That's the name of my editor. He's sending me bits and pieces here and there, and I'm dropping them into my editor and laying different soundtracks under them and playing with them and giving notes. And it's a slow and arduous process. I really think it's going to start amping up here. I got a couple other projects that are in front of it too that I got to do. Like tomorrow I'm doing reshoots for a short that I did last year. And then Groupers becomes front burner. And I think that we're really going to start getting on a roll. I think every single day I'm going to probably be spending a considerable amount of time going over edits and figuring out how things fit and work. And it's the worst. It's my least favorite. I hear directors always talking about how the editing bay is their favorite part of the process.
Yeah, film comes together in the editing bay.
Not for me. I hate it.
Really?
I hate it. because I can't. I have very little control over what's already there. Obviously, I've always heard the douchey thing too, like the last rewrites in the editing bay. No, I'm not rewriting anything. Why would I do that?
It's written.
Why? I never understood that. Why would you change the story after it's shot and you've already done it? Like, if you're still rewriting in the editing bay, you got problems. Yeah, you got big problems.
It's I guess maybe if an actor gives you something that inspires you to get something else, maybe. But I agree in principle.
But this process for me, anyways, I hate everything I do. I always will. I guess I've just come to the sad, horrible fact that anything I do will always be awful in my eyes.
Well, no, most people agree they hate everything you do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know. So I'm in the majority here, which is rare for me. I'm usually in the minority.
Usually you're swimming against the tide.
But I agree. Everything I do is just absolute shit. And, you know,
Atticus is pretty great.
Atticus is great, yes.
But you're half responsible for that.
Half responsible, and I didn't get to actually create him with any kind of creativity.
To birth him. That's true. It was out of your hands.
My greatest creation. My greatest creation is Atticus thus far.
It's the hardest show, being a dad.
Anyways, but once I, you know, find the right score and find the right tempo and it starts to come together, I think that's when I'm going to start to get jazzed. I am not there yet. I'm not there yet. I'm getting closer to that date, I think. But right now, it's knots in my stomach and I feel sick and I feel like, I don't know what.
Yeah, I imagine because your baby, so to speak, in this case, Groupers, is out of your hands. It's in someone else's hands. It's being assembled. It's being massaged.
Yeah, but let me be clear about this. When everything's said and done, no matter how long it takes, it will be my edit. I'm not just saying, oh yeah, that looks good. Next.
So you've outsourced it completely.
What's that?
Oh no, that's the opposite of what you're
saying. Yeah, okay. Absolute opposite of what I'm saying. It's as though I'm sitting in the editing bay and saying, you know, no, let's try this. Let's move that around. I don't like that at all. And Mike is great. He's. I let him know up front, like, I might be a pain in the ass to work with at times because I'm not going to, like, be settled until I feel like it's as right as it can be. So
you're cashing your big Hollywood checks and doing your cocaine with your hookers and all that stuff while the workers toil away in Chicago or somewhere off.
It's the exact opposite of what I just said.
Sorry. Yeah. Trying to interpret.
Thank you for listening. Why don't we move on to Flick Fashion? I don't like this discussion.
You want to confess? People want to hear about your groupers. I guess when there's something to hear about. You'll update us.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Once there's something. But right now, there's nothing. Well, there's not much. Other than,
but it's been a while.
The muck in the mire. We're down in the muck in the mire.
You're in the trenches.
That's a quote from a children's book, The Little Blue Truck. Stuck in the muck in the mire.
Let's confess the flicks we've seen in the past week. Hey, let's call it Flick Fashions.
Let's do that.
Let's confess the flicks we've seen in the past week. Anderson assigned me a film. Speaking of feeling stick to your stomach.
What's that?
Just Eat It.
Oh, Just Eat It. Let's do this.
Just Eat It, a food waste story.
Yes.
Is a 2014 documentary. It is directed by Grant Baldwin. It stars Grant Baldwin and I believe his partner, Jenny Rustmeyer.
Mm-hmm.
It is, as Anderson alluded to, pointed out in his initial Flick Fashion description of it, we as a nation and a world, but nation especially, waste an insane amount of food every year, just throwing it out or, as the documentary exposes, a lot of perfectly fine produce never makes it to the shelves because it doesn't look good enough. It's not attractive. Like, people buy the good looking produce and a lot of times they have to toss out the, you know, perfectly good nectarines or the perfectly good whatever.
It's true. Bananas, all this is true, yes.
Avocados. You get the idea.
Right.
So they're doing a kind of Morgan Spurlock thing because in addition to being about that, it's also about these two, Grant and Jenny, and it's about they're going for 6 months, right? For 6 months, they're gonna eat nothing but extra food, discarded food, which sounds daunting, and it is. It goes over the challenges.
They dumpster dive essentially.
They do a lot of dumpster diving, which is off-putting.
I get it though, especially when you take a step back and you really hear what they're saying about how much waste there is, and then they actually go see the amount of waste.
It's not crazy.
Like they're throwing this trash out with the cat litter, you know. They're not
picking hamburgers out of, you know, doggy doo. They're finding, which was astounding. They're finding so they start in town. They're in Canada, right? So they start in town and they're having luck, little luck here and there, because a lot of the restaurants and grocery stores and such like that keep their dumpsters locked, right? You can't get into them.
Right.
But so they decide to go a little on the outskirts of town, go to the warehouse district where, you know, the warehouses just toss things out in dumpsters by the truckload.
And you're living with them. You're dealing with their daily issues with having enough to eat, and when you get excited for them, when like I think that it's been a while since I've seen this, but doesn't Grant find like a bunch of eggs? And he's like,
oh yeah, he finds like an insane amount of eggs. And
yeah, we'll be eating eggs for a while.
We found chicken. Yeah. Like they find some shockingly, you know, edible food, which was surprising to me.
Not really surprising when you think of how wasteful we are.
You're right. It was not surprising on that hand, but not surprising on the hand of like, you don't know what else has been in that bin. There could be any number of contaminants. There could be any number of they could throw away bleach or pesticides or raid in that.
You wash it. Okay. Hey, you think the food you're buying at the market down the street is not covered in that stuff? Oh, it's covered.
But I'm talking about they're in a dumpster, like that, where that stuff gets thrown by everyone.
You think the guy that's
in any case,
who knows where the food's been, really?
There's two parts of the documentary, two facets. There's the part where they're exposing and examining all the food waste that goes on in North America. Especially Canada being where they're from, but also their journey, their sort of Morgan Spurlock thing, that was the least interesting part to me. Mm. I didn't find them interesting. Everyone else in the documentary was more interesting than them. Every other talking head, every other farmer, every farmer's market guy, Grant and Jenny were the least interesting people.
Perhaps they were trying to play straight man for the sake of the audience, trying to make it about themselves.
They never interacted with these people, so it would be a very poor decision to consider.
The reason why I brought this up is because I still use this some of the tricks that one.
It made me think more about my own actions. I will say that
it did make me think about my own actions. Even though I'm pretty good at not wasting stuff, I'm pretty good about that. It's almost like I was born in the during the Depression or something. I hate the idea of wasted food.
Agree.
The point that I eat my wife's crust off her grilled cheese sandwiches, you can tell by my chunkiness.
Any leftover little bits, anything we put in Charlie's food.
Not anything, do that a lot too. Yeah, the garbage cans, that are to the dogs. But like, you know, eggs, like, hey, they're a couple days past, especially now with Atticus. Mm. Like before, I just cook them up, but I don't want to give Atticus anything bad. A couple days past, they're pretty, they go over this too in the documentary.
Yeah, they talk about sell-by dates, use-by dates, best-by dates.
It's in the company's best interest to make these probably way premature to keep them from lawsuits and also to sell more food.
Sure. Because
obviously, it just mathematically makes sense. But they drop an egg into a little glass of water. If it sinks, good to go. If it floats, no good.
Mm, interesting.
I still use that. I use that quite a bit.
Interesting.
All right, so you liked it, though.
I did like it. Overall, I learned a lot. Overall, I found it mostly interesting. Their through line of their little self-experiment was by far the worst part. At one point, Jenny, understandably, pretty early on, is getting pretty frustrated. He's like, why don't we just quit?
Yeah.
Like, this is stupid. Why don't we just quit? And Krantz says, because we haven't proven anything. Mm. And my whole thing is like, what you're trying to prove is very, very, very obvious to everyone. Waste a lot of food. We could probably waste a lot less. And
but they wanted to be successful after 6 months.
But to wit, like, so like...
To wit, you just
to
said.
To wit.
You said
so
that.
You know what they do?
Yeah.
They do the thing that a lot of movies do. Like, they put a definition up, you know, of a word, you know, and then...
To wit would have just gone up if we were a movie.
Oh, no, it would not because... but our movie would have.
I feel like
there.
I should stop
they
you,
define
but go ahead.
The what?
Why? Just go ahead.
Okay, they define words like consequence and perfection and change. Which I don't feel like any of those need definitions.
Well, maybe they want to really pinpoint those words and point out, you know, underline them. That's how you underline them without screaming it as a character in the movie.
There was some pretty great cinematography, and normally that's a bit of a crutch, but for me to say like, oh, it looked great.
No, it's nice when a documentary has some
astounding shots. Like, they actually showed a farmer upside down in a reflection in a droplet of water at one point. They're like extreme zoom on a droplet of water off of like a vine, and the reflection was the farmer they were talking about. Like, there were some nifty shots in this movie.
Nifty.
Neat.
But not the stuff in their house. That was kind of homey.
Well, that was a different, you know, tone. It was
all right.
Like,
so you liked the whole movie, but you didn't care for Grant and Jenny. That's what I'm hearing.
Well, they seemed friendly, fine as
people.
I guess
this wasn't fair to do to you.
They seemed fine as people.
Grant and Jenny, listeners of the program.
Really?
We've met them both. They were both at the live show. They flew out for the live show. They both handed us copies of Just Eat It, which I took home and watched in FlickFest because it was enjoyable.
Did I mention how much I liked it?
And it stuck with me. If it didn't stick with me and if it was no good, I would have just forgotten about it. But here we are maybe, a year and a half later almost. And I thought, you know what? Why not have Brian watch it? But I didn't want to let you know that they're listeners. So... it went a little south, but it's not like you're saying anything bad about, like, you know, the way they looked
or anything.
Fine looking people.
And overall, a very good movie. I learned a lot and stuff that will stick with me. I've already, saw this a week ago now and I'm already still thinking about
that's why I wanted you to watch it. I wish that you didn't have to, like, go after them as characters.
They seem
of the
like
film.
Very well, mm-hmm. To wit.
Oh,
maybe in the next documentary, they're not the stars unless they want to, you know, do something else horrible for themselves,
they've
like eat more food
other,
out of dumpsters.
They've made other documentaries.
Really?
Yes.
Thanks, Grant.
All of which will be.
Did they really come to the live show?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh God, I remember.
The Clean Bin Project is the other movie that they made. They have not made anything since.
Got it. Grant and Jenny, thanks for coming to the live show and thanks for hooking us up with your film. Overall, I liked it and I recommend it to people. I think I saw it on Amazon. If you're an Amazon Prime subscriber,
you also have a DVD somewhere floating around because Grant handed it to you. I was there when that happened.
I take nothing home with me from those
okay.
events.
All right,
I probably handed it as a logo.
Hey, did
do
you,
something with this.
Let's talk movies. Did you see Atomic Blonde?
I might have.
Oh, let's talk about it.
Are we going to flick fast that?
Let's flick fast.
Atomic Blonde.
Let's do it.
Does anyone we know in the movie first?
That was almost funny.
Almost. I like the laughter and then the almost funny. Atomic Blonde is a 2017 film in theaters now, directed by David Leitch. David Leitch is the uncorder. What?
Could be Leitch.
Could be. I'm saying it could be Leitch. I'm saying Leitch. He is the uncredited director.
Yes.
John Wick 1.
John Wick 1.
The director of the upcoming Deadpool 2.
And he also did a Deadpool short, which no one saw. Mm-hmm. And extensive stunt credits.
Yes.
Extensive.
I would say before John Wick in this movie, best known, obviously, as a stunt coordinator.
So Atomic Blonde starring Charlize Theron.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice to see beautiful Charlize Theron back because last time I think I saw her anyways on the big screen was the ever great Mad Max Fury Road. But she was not looking like Theron of Beauty and Hot.
She wasn't looking like Maybelline Theron or whatever it is she does ads for. James McAvoy, Sofia Boutella, Toby Jones, and John Goodman are in this cast.
Yes.
Great trailer. High expectations. High expectations when I saw the Red Band trailer. I saw Charlize kicking ass.
Did not see that.
She kicked a lot of ass.
Mm-hmm. Did you like this when it first came out when it was called The Long Kiss Goodnight with Gina Davis?
Long Kiss Goodnight.
No? Did you like it when it was Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2?
I did like it when it was Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2.
Obviously, they all have a through line, which is a female protagonist that kicks ass. She's an ass-kicking, badass bitch, right? And this movie, it comes on IMDb, is called Action for Genre. Action... Wait, hold on. Let me find
now
it.
You action, realize these are user submitted.
Thriller. No. This is the actual on IMDb.
You realize these are that users
can. The genre?
Like just like they can do for the trivia.
I don't think we can go in there and make
let's go in there right now.
Atomic Blonde, a comedy.
Let's make Group as a romance.
Or romantic
let's
comedy. Make group as a I don't romance. Think that can happen.
I don't know.
Yeah, you don't
I
know.
Have no idea.
The studio actually gives some information, sure. Brian. They don't just put up a blank canvas and go, let the people who go see the movie just fill out the blanks.
Okay, so what's it listed as?
Hold on.
Did I mention how much I like Just Eat It?
And Grant?
I liked it especially.
Action, mystery, thriller. It is all three of those things.
And it is.
And it hits one of them out of the park. The other two I couldn't care less about.
Really?
Yes.
You didn't like the action or the thriller?
The mystery was the only part you liked? No, the mystery I couldn't give a fuck about. Right?
Really?
Could not care less about the story. It's
interesting.
Like, it just felt like homework. Like, we need her to be over here doing some kind of James Bond-like shit. The Russians have to be involved, and there has to be like a list, and there should be some double-crossing and some spy shit.
Okay.
I never really cared at all.
It's interesting because I compared it more. I never saw Long Kiss Goodnight. I compared it more to John Wick for obvious reasons. It's sort of a very, very, very shorthand way of saying it would be a female John Wick. But whereas John Wick had just enough plot to like keep it going.
Just enough. This was plot heavy.
See, I felt like this was this appropriate amount of plot. I actually kind of I liked the sort of
the list,
the Cold War spy thing.
It was
a bit of a MacGuffin. Like it wasn't really that important to the movie. The movie could have existed with any number of plots.
I just when you have a plot device that is a motivating factor for your protagonist, I would like it to be either super low stakes, but it's important to the protagonist, right? Or something really clever and something I can get on board with. I didn't give a fuck about the list. I still don't quite understand whose names were on the list or what it was going to expose. I don't care.
Okay. I think they did a decent job explaining that it was the double agent was the real prize. Like finding out who the double agent was the real reason the list was.
The guy commits. So the action sequences, as you would expect from this director who may or may not be named Leech or Litch. He's got a lot of credits, stunt credits, over the last three decades, I think, doing stunts. So you imagine you're going to see some really great stunts and some amazing things you've not seen before. Sure. And that delivers in this movie, for sure. And that says a lot in a world where we got Raid Redemption, right?
True. I mean, yes, the bar's been raised.
And there is some stuff in here that rivals Raid Redemption.
I agree. It's got a sort of fun, visceral, kinetic energy. I mean, the movie, when it's cooking, it cooks.
And it's also the 80s. And
it's set during the fall of the Berlin Wall.
So you got a period piece there, which Brian calls female films. Mm-hmm. And it's taking place like in Berlin and Russia. There's some stuff in Russia and London, right? Maybe not Russia. No Russia? Maybe not Russia.
I think the entire... Oh, no, because they're the flashbacks.
No, they're in London
sure.
So you get period piece stuff, which is really nice. And it is gray and mopey and, you know, not real pretty and vibrant. However, I love the period, and they were careful, and it worked. And
I love the soundtrack. I think
the soundtrack was very 80s, and it felt like a Ridley Scott movie from the 80s a little bit.
Yeah, maybe even Tony Scott. It's a vibrant. It bursts off the screen in a lot
more
of ways.
Ridley. A little more Ridley.
I agree.
But there's one long take, even though there's
a number of
cheats, but one of the best long takes. And I don't know what tipped me off, but right before the long take begun, I don't know if you had the same reaction. I'm like, oh, they're setting up a long take right here. Something amazing is about to happen.
I think it took me a few seconds to realize it. And then when they kept it going, like, it was amazing.
So without that, I don't like this movie. With that scene that starts in a stairwell, ends on a street, and there are a number of cheats. Don't get me wrong. I mean, if you're looking for them, which douchebag that I am, I look for them and I find them.
Well, some are noticeable. They end up, you know, characters back or
that
something.
That being said, there's a number of things that in that long take that I don't understand how they did it. I don't understand how she could have been that well-trained to do what she was doing without a body double, unless they're using CGI trickery. And there's a scene where a guy is standing full, straight erect, and he falls over backwards on stairs, and I don't know how the fuck they did that.
There was a lot of stuff.
Something simple like that.
A lot of stuntmen earned their money in that scene, in this movie.
Did they put steel plates on his back and head? How do you do that?
I liked at one point she's having a knockdown, drag-out fight with a guy, and they are just trying to kill each other, and they're fighting so long and so hard, they both become so exhausted they can barely fight anymore. Yeah.
That was like Eastern Promises. Yeah, same type of thing happened there. But yeah, there are some... the rope around the guy's neck and she jumps. That was great.
There was a lot of great stuff.
There was some cool stuff. It's not as good as Raid Redemption as far as action goes and stunts, but it makes you think of it. I liked it way more than John Wick.
I did too. I like this movie, I think, more than you. This is a four-star movie for me. Four out of five.
If you could see the movie or go hang out with me, you'd rather go see the movie again?
No, I meant to say I liked it more than you did. Although, actually, I have the opposite that way.
Yeah.
I'd take my friends Grant and Jenny.
I'd rather see Barney the movie again.
I'd take my friends Grant and Jenny to go see it, probably, and hang out with them, because I enjoy
Don't try
around.
And make up by just giving them more airtime. Like, that's going to make everything go away, everything that you said. Such a cheap trick, Brian.
Atomic Blonde's really enjoyable. Yeah. 75% of Rotten Tomatoes, and I feel like it should be higher. This is
75 sounds just about perfect to me. Because it's without that scene, which comes late in the movie, I'd say it's the beginning of the third act. I'm thinking trying to kick the cigarettes over here, the lung darts over here, and always trying to kick them.
Lots of smoke.
I don't think they've made smoking look sexier or more fun in about 10 years.
Lots of vodka on ice.
Yeah. Was that paid? Paid to play, you think? Stoli got a lot of credit.
I wouldn't be shocked if I'm going to try and put this delicately. I wouldn't be shocked if they went out to a number of different vodka companies and said, hey, this is what we're thinking. But I will say that the Stoli, the choice of vodka is important to her character.
Perhaps.
Like, she wouldn't be the same if she had, like, you know, Sky Vodka made in San Francisco.
It's just funny because I guess maybe because I'm older and maybe a little more bitter, but I just don't fall for this cool guy, or in this case, cool lady, living a cool life in her cool apartment.
But it was set in 1989. I mean, this is almost a, I wouldn't say a parody, it's a takeoff of that whole ethos, that old 1980s.
Yeah, it is. It's an homage.
Yeah.
But
it's like Drive in a very different way.
But Drive didn't really romanticize like his lifestyle outside the car.
I don't know, man.
Really not outside the car. But like her whole, like,
I'm gonna show you some.
I remember being younger and like buying that shit. Like, I'm going to be that guy one day living in an apartment, smoking my cigarette, looking cool. And now it's like, I'm coughing a lot and I just want to stop.
I can see how for a recovering smoker it would be.
Oh, I went and bought a pack immediately after the movie. I'm very susceptible. Brian, suggestible, susceptible.
And a bottle of Stoli and a 12 case of cigarettes.
Jeff Covey. We're moving on now. Jeff Covey. Listener Jeff Covey. Way back in the day when I was raising money.
I liked his movie too.
Raising money for that groupers over there. He got one of the 10 spots. Assign me a film to Flick Fest. Okay. And I'm getting towards the end of this. I only have like, I think, two or three left after Jeff Covey's pick. But Jeff Covey had me watch a documentary.
Have you liked all of them so far? I feel like there was one you were kind of middling on.
Yeah, I wasn't a giant fan of Romeo's Bleeding, but I think that was a joke.
It's Romeo's Bleeding.
Stop it, Brian. We're not going to go there again.
You can't see
it. And there was something else, too. The last one that I did, I can't remember it.
Was it like a genre horror, like an Asian horror flick or something?
I don't know. You're putting me on the spot, and I don't like that. Right, you got to email me these questions ahead of time, all right, so that I can be prepared.
Well, if you care about our listeners like Grant and Jenny, and they're
Jeff, I can go back and look at my email quite easily. But what was the last movie? I remember having the talk with the guy too when we barely even talked about the movie. We just George Kane out of Hawaii. I remember the guy. I remember the conversation, but we didn't talk about the movie that he had me watch.
Anyway,
I must know now. I must know.
Sorry.
Well, can we take a break right now so we can find out? Breaking the Maya Code, documentary, 2008, directed by a guy named David Lebrun. Thanks to Jeff for turning me on to this. What do you know about the Maya culture and the Aztec culture, Brian?
Very little. I could barely tell you which one came first.
The hieroglyphs, nothing. The glyphs.
I know that they saw there was in a movie called Apocalypto where a head rolled down a giant staircase.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah, it was a temple. Same here, kind of like a lot of white noise. There's a lot to it, and I don't really understand it.
They were
the
original
confused.
Dirty Mexicans.
Yes. Brian, what are you doing?
Okay, maybe not.
What the fuck?
They could have been San Diegans.
What are you
How
talking
far
about?
Did the Mayan rain reach?
Why dirty? What was that?
That's a
what
joke.
Was that?
It's not hilarious a hilarious joke.
Brian, why do you... I've been meaning to ask you this for a while. What's that? Is it because you just don't have the comedic chops that you like that you lean on the racist
I'm going to say whatever B is...
Is that why? Like, why do you lean on the racist comedy so much? Why?
Because it gets a reaction out of you.
I think it's because
you had to pause the show right now.
You don't have the comedic chops, and you lean on it. It's like a crutch. It's like, oh, I could say something outrageously racist right now, and I'm sure a few people would laugh.
Anderson Cowan.
N-word.
Anderson Cowan just criticized my comedic chops.
I did. I absolutely did.
The balls on you.
I got balls. I got a big one. And they're white. I got white balls.
Oh, so they're good.
Brian.
See?
It's not funny, though. It's not. It's a crutch, and I don't understand. Anyways.
It's like complimenting the cinematography.
All right, so Breaking the Maya Code, dense. It's like an hour and 55 minutes, right? Mm. And what did you say about cinematographer?
I said it's like complimenting the cinematography. It's a crutch. It's a callback from earlier when I complimented the cinematography of Just Eat It.
Oh, it was a bit of a crutch.
Although it was actually really good.
Mm-hmm. This movie breaks down the glyphs, which is what they refer to them as, not hieroglyphs. It's the glyphs, maybe just because it gets tired. Maybe that's shorthand, for the industry.
Like in the newspaper industry, they call paragraphs graphs.
Yeah,
the first graph
shorten everything. Yeah. So you're talking the lingo, right? But it traverses the entire history of the first non-native explorers. Cortez was one of them.
Okay.
Sia Cortez now exists today. He first showed up back, and I'm going to get all of the dates screwed up, but like the 1500s, maybe before that, and all the natives, all the Mayas, like they fled to the jungle.
Are they Mayans?
I always thought it was Mayans too, but they call them Mayas.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's how ignorant I am.
It's called Breaking the Maya Code, not Mayan Code. It's Maya Code and the Maya culture. Yeah, it's white noise. And now, after this hour and 55 minutes, I feel like I took like a master class. And talking to Jeff about the movie, who assigned it to me, he actually listened to 29 hours worth of some kind of audio information on it. He's deep. He went down.
Why is he so interesting?
He's been down because it's fascinating. Once you start to scratch the surface, Brent, he's gone all over like Central America and the Yucatan. He was telling me like Yucatan is flat plains, and you drive out there. Anytime you see a little hill or a little bit of mound or anything, it's man made. Like it's just flatlands, and there's all sorts of, like little like mini hills, mini little like. What do you call it? Gamol. Like small mountains. What's another word for hill?
Like a bluff
anytime you see anything that's popping up out of the ground, man-made. But it's been covered over by Mother Nature over the years. But there's so many things that have not even been explored. Like he's telling me we're at about 5% of what we've actually uncovered from these ancient people that got taken over. So by the Spaniards back in multiple years. So it traverses and follows all of these different people who have been coming from the last 400 or 500 years. To starts with like making little like one guy. I think it was Cortez. No, it wasn't Cortez. One long before photographs, just drawing like these glyphs that they find, these hieroglyphs, right? Trying to decipher them. They bring them back to the king. Oh, look at this. And then they get really good artists. They'd send really good artists out there that would like draw it really well. And then obviously photographs like really made things different. And then when the Xerox came out with the photocopies, that really expanded it to all sorts of different people that could get in. They had everyone from like scholars to like a 12-year-old boy who like got really into it. And he was like cracking codes and figuring things out. It lays it all out there. It's exceptionally dense, but my God, am I glad that I saw it, because I feel like I know this whole other like world now, and I'm actually very interested in visiting some of these.
Did the Mayas encompass like all of Mexico up until like, did they ever go like how big the Maya I'm calling the Maya Empire now. Did they ever get like how much it encapsulated?
Aztecs aren't really discussed in this. I'm sure there's a different documentary out there about that. Mm. This is mostly about their language.
Okay.
And one old white guy actually put it greatly when he said, you know, in the 1400s or whatever, my ancestors were back in Scotland, like painting themselves blue and bashing each other over the head. None of them could read or write.
Right.
And everything
was spoken.
Civilization over here, like they've been, you know, reading and writing. And it goes into like how the Catholic Church went over there. I think it was like around the 1700s. Once again, don't hold me to these dates, but
founded all the missions.
And they were, you know, turning them all into Christians. Yeah. And then they found some. They found some of the Maya that were like down the street, and they were still like praying to their gods and stuff. Oh, that priest
that
got very
stop.
Upset.
That
he tortured them. I think he killed a number of people, and he more importantly, he gathered all of the books and burned them. And burn the books. And to this date, only 4 books with Maya stories and whatnot exist. Only 4. But by the end of this thing, they've cracked it. They've cracked this code. They can actually speak it with the dialect in the mother tongue of the actual Maya language. And they explain the glyphs. It's not for everybody. I think some people, it might be too much. But if this dumbass, speaking about myself here, could really get pumped up about it, I'm really glad that I saw it.
What? Where can one see this?
I saw it on iTunes. Okay. It's available.
Is it worth a few bucks?
Yeah, I mean, and if you're a teacher, you're
this
teaching
feels like a History Channel thing.
It felt a little Nat Geo for sure. Yeah. But
are you sure not being nice to this?
I'm positive.
I
would have never stumbled across. This is like a great gift that somebody gave you that you would have never thought to buy yourself. It's one of those, and I'm really happy that he did this because, like I said, like I feel like I have a much better understanding today than I did last week of just what 3,000 years worth of culture. And just watching, you know, less than 2-hour documentary that was really, really, really well done. And the cast of characters, here's one more example and we'll move on. But this one guy, scholar, is trying to crack it, right? And he thinks that he's onto something. Mm-hmm. He thinks that this one glyph is like, it means this sound. Right. And then somebody, and very competitive people, somebody comes along and says, oh, no, because their word for dog is this. So that means that won't work. I'm pretty sure that was. And so the poor guy, just after years of research, goes, oh, well, I guess I was wrong. And he walks away. Right. 50 years later, some dude in Russia during the height of the Cold War, he stumbles across some kind of book and he's, he becomes interested in it. He picks up where that guy left off. Turns out that guy was right
the whole time
because there's another word for dog or something. And it made sense. I might be getting the dog thing messed up, but that he, 50 years later, he picks up and then he cracks all these things. And they show this, this Russian guy who's like behind the Iron Curtain. And every picture of him is just so angry and stoic and just so Russian. Right. But then, so then there's all this propaganda that comes around him. The politics get involved and they're going, oh, look at this great Russian. He figured out what Westerners can't figure out. And all the Westerners are like rejecting it, going, oh no, whatever he said is not true because he's Russian. Right. Don't trust the Ruskies. It's fascinating. It's really, really fascinating. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. What was it called?
The cast of characters.
Decoding the Maya. What?
Breaking the Maya Code. 2008, directed by David Lebron. Lebron, he's got a cat. He's been making documentaries since way back when. Like 60s, I think, was his first credit. So this guy, you know, he's learned it, and a very interesting documentary. I would not recommend this to 15-year-old me, but I bet 15-year-old me would have even gotten something out of it if one of my teachers hadn't made me watch it.
Right, but you would, in class, you'd have been sitting there with your arms folded. They'd be like, nope.
If you've ever wanted to go, visit Central America, or you have any interest in that, this is like almost must-watch viewing before you go down there. And if you're a teacher and it's never occurred to you, like if you teach this kind of stuff, this is a great tool. I could see, you know, assigning this to your students and really getting them more interested in it. Because, you know, people from, and there's also this movement in the 70s where, like, they didn't give a fuck if you, like, you know, were trained at Yale. Like, there was an 8-year-old kid who used to go to these sites with his dad, and, like, he was really good at it. So they're like, yeah, come on in, kid, see if you can figure stuff out. He did. He ended up being, like, one of the front runners by the time
he was. Pool.
Yeah. All right, well.
And who's the listener who signed that to?
That was Jeff Covey.
Did you talk to him about it already?
Yeah. Nice. We spoke for about 45 minutes all about that culture. One more. I got one more.
Ooh, but bonus.
This is not a real documentary because it's only 60 minutes
it's
long.
It's fake?
It's only 60 okay. minutes long. And Will McPherson actually suggested it. Listener Will, thank you for suggesting this. Talked about it on the After Disaster. Not going to spend a lot of time here, but it's streaming on Fuckflix, I believe. If it's not Fuckflix, it's Amazon Prime. I'm 90% sure it's Fuckflix. It's called Terror at the Mall.
Yeah, I heard you talk about this.
2014, Terror at the Mall, directed by Dan Reed. It's 60 minutes or just under.
Sounds heavy.
And it is heavy. And I would not recommend this to everyone either, but it's fascinating and it gets its hooks in you. There was a terrorist event in Kenya in 2013. 71 people were killed as these four gunmen took over this mall. It was a normal-looking mall, like the one that we'd have right down the street here. You never know that you're like in Kenya. I think that a lot of us think, you know, oh, Kenya, Africa, like, you know, you think third world, but no, like there's a lot of affluent parts of Africa. And this mall looked like every other mall. It was a nice big mall, and these four gunmen came and just started picking people off. Mm. They were from Somalia, and they wanted vengeance on something that they don't even refer to in this documentary, but some kind of bloodshed had happened against their people in Somalia, right. So they're coming to get vengeance.
I am the captain now.
And the thing that makes this so hard to watch but interesting and riveting and real is 90% of it or so is told through the cameras, the surveillance cameras that were all in and around the mall. So you see... You do see people getting shot. It's not like, oh my God, I can't see this. Like, I'm squeamish. I don't like that kind of stuff at all. But it makes it that much more real and that much more honest. And then the other 10, 15% of the documentary is told through talking heads of survivors who actually lived it and explained. Jeez. And it's eye opening. And it's not like I'm out there hunting for news, but I'm a little bit upset and disturbed, I guess, that this massive terrorist event happened in Kenya in 2013, and this is the first time I've ever heard of it. You know, it's like it should be top of mind.
Yeah, it sounds vaguely familiar, but I couldn't tell anything about it.
Uh-huh. Don't act like you know everything.
No, but I'm saying I maybe saw a thing about it on, I don't know, online or Facebook or something.
So Terror at the Mall, if you're looking to spruce up your summer and want a little... Jesus, it is hard to watch at times. And what's the most interesting thing about it is just how... Schizophrenic is an easy thing to say, but just how hot and cold these terrorists were. They go from like picking people off left and right to like making faces at a baby and like trying to make him happy to letting people go and apologizing. It's fucking bizarre. It's very, very odd. Yeah. All right. Terror at the Mall.
Yeah, that's a nice note to leave on. Mm-hmm. Coming up next.
Relationships.
Coming up next. Top 5 movies that influenced our relationships. I'm trying harder every day. Still you want to stay. You Anderson, you were saying you wanted to, upon seeing Dunkirk, you wanted to do more research, find out more about the actual event. Mm-hmm. You're like, now you're compelled. You want to find out more.
I never said that.
You did say that.
I did not.
You said you wanted to know more about it. Did you not?
I don't recall ever saying that, no.
Well, if you had, this is your yes and moment.
No, I didn't say that.
Someone bought the book, Dunkirk, A Miracle of Deliverance, on our Amazon.com banner click-through on Anderson and Brian.
Yes, and they did.
Yes, and. So it's a good purchase.
Don't fucking yes and me.
I really thought that you said that.
I don't think you said that.
Compelled.
I don't believe
that. Maybe you're compelled
to
find out more about the making of the movie.
Yes, it's usually the case. I know the situation. I mean, there's not much to know. They're all sitting there on the beach getting picked off.
All right. Someone got that book. Other things purchased on that Amazon banner on AndersonandBrian.com, along with the Dunkirk book, A Miracle of Deliverance. Someone got Football Outsiders Almanac 2017, the essential guide to the 2017 NFL and college football season. Someone's boning up for fantasy football season, methinks. Football Outsiders does a lot of analytics and data and outside the box thinking. Very valuable resource.
It's good to know.
Very right. valuable Thank resource. Someone got... Oh, God, I forgot to write down how many. It was a lot. It was like 27 Western Digital Purple 3-terabyte surveillance hard disk drives. Thanks for clicking through and getting all your hard disk drives through us. A Sony 43-inch 4K Ultra HD Smart LED TV. I'm dying. a DJI Phantom quadcopter drone with 2.7K. I almost said 27K. 2.7K HD video camera, an Intel NUC kit components, an iRobot Roomba. You just got a Roomba, didn't you, Logan? The dog watches it go around the apartment?
Yeah.
The house? When does the dog not appreciate the Roomba?
When it's coming right at it.
I would not appreciate that.
I've heard that the Roomba takes measurements of your house or apartment floor plan, emails it back to headquarters.
To iRobot.com.
And then you get ads from furniture companies. That's what I heard.
Really?
Recently I heard that.
How it's not 100% true, but sure.
Wow.
You can skim articles if you want.
What happened to Yes And?
Bill Burr told me.
You can skim articles if you want. A tech for Apple 32 gig memory RAM upgrade. Amazon Basics dual side-by-side monitor display mounting arm. Infant Optics video baby monitor with interchangeable optical lens. A SanDisk Ultra 2 500 gigabyte height, 7 millimeter height solid state drive. Athletic Greens premium green superfood cocktail. Plantronics advanced Bluetooth headset system. Kingston Technology, Hyper Impact 16-gig laptop memory, Odyssey Extreme car battery, Icy Hot Smart Relief back and hip starter kit. I guess I need a starter kit for that. Treat Me Bondage Restraint sex kit, 10 pieces, and Star Wars The Last Jedi poster. That's you're rolling the dice there. What if you don't like the movie? What you're buying the poster before the movie and comes out? Careful.
What?
What if you don't like the movie?
People know what they like, all right?
What if it fast forward, rewind to 1997? I'm going to buy
and you know what? Those
Phantom Menace poster.
Believe they liked it at the time. I remember them. I remember people saying they liked it.
There
and
were people
the,
that convinced themselves.
You can take posters off your wall.
Hold on, Logan.
Logan's being real
Logan's
cheeky.
Being real.
This
real.
Segment. Real.
Talk, real snippy.
Cheeky
real
little
snippy.
Bitch over there.
Talking.
Here are the movers that click this. The man who knew too much was clicked through, as well as planes. Planes 2? I missed both planes.
I missed both planes. I wasn't compelled to see other planes.
I only saw one Cars.
Yeah, me too.
Didn't see the other two Cars. I saw 1 through 7 trucks, though. I saw all the trucks.
Did you see the Monsters, Inc. sequel, Going to College? Or Monsters
no,
U?
I did not. Mm. Did not see that. I felt like it was going to be a lot of bros doing douchey monster things.
Wasn't compelled.
I saw Moana was clicked through, as well as Slither. The Last Temptation of Christ. Oh, so controversial when that came out. You remember that?
Yes, it was like cover of Time magazine or something.
People were like, how in the world can you expect me to believe that Willem Dafoe is Christ when he's not nearly as hot as he's supposed to be? As well as Date Night. Speaking of Bill Burr, Bill Burr's in Date Night.
Did you ever see Date Night?
Fuck no. Back to the program.
Put it on the list. Oh, hi there. This is Kim Kardashian. You're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBryan.com. New trends coming in, old niggas linking up to the top where we could have been when I think of us. Anderson, controversy.
Wait, before you begin all that, we got to take that break, and I used that time wisely, and I looked it up, and George Kane, it was, I fault you, not me. I'm the one who saw the movie. I'm the one who flick fest and everything. I think the least you could do is remember.
I said it was an Asian genre flick.
Uzumasa Limelight. I don't remember you saying Asian genre flick. I just
Logan,
tuned you out, I guess.
Back me up on that.
Perhaps you did. But Uzumasa Limelight. And it led to a... did not love the movie because I'm not a big samurai guy, but it led to a bunch of fun, interesting conversations, if you recall, as well as George Lucas and where he got Jedi from.
How wonderful.
Remember all that? Do you remember all that?
I do.
Bri? Yeah.
It was like a Japanese version of Jedi.
Jidaki,
okay.
Which is like a genre, I believe. But, hey, George, nothing. I appreciate the contribution to Groupers, yep. And that's more me just being old than the movie not sticking with me. I'm getting to the point where I don't remember names of movies that I saw a couple weeks ago. It's scary. I got a new thing, too, now that I do, Brian.
Your eyes just got wide.
I don't look it up.
What's that?
If I can't beforehand? Recall something,
oh,
right. I don't reach into my pocket, pull out my phone, and then just either I think of it on my own or I just
looked it up.
Well, I'm not talking about that. That was for the sake of the show.
Okay.
It's like that Noah Baumbach movie. Remember?
Yeah, I was going to say. Wait, I was just about to say. It's like While We're Young with Adam Driver's character.
Let's just not know.
Yeah. Like, literally. Like, it's frustrating at first, but I'm making my brain recall and work for it because I think that our brains are going to mush because we can just look in our little phone, you know?
I do that for the opposite reason, just because I'm lazy and don't care.
Just don't care?
It's like, I don't care.
See, you don't have my DNA, though. I must know. I mean, just saw what happened just now.
Yes, of course.
I have to know. It's frustrating, Brian.
Is it having a calming influence on you, not knowing these things?
I think it's. I'm getting to the crux, and I'm going to come down the other side and be calm.
So you're right now becoming more agitated.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still
you're
on the
ascending,
uphill.
Agitated.
Still on the uphill.
Agitated mountain.
So far, I've only been to my own will twice. And looked it up because I had to.
You've
know.
Given in?
Given in.
It was
yeah.
for the good of the show.
I'm like, what was the name of my favorite movie again? And then I just typed in.
Dear Siri.
I typed in Stanley Kubrick. Scott Kubrick, I think, is what
okay.
Violent white clothing. And okay. I got a Clockwork Orange. My brain is really failing.
It really is. You're hanging out with kids too much.
Scott Kubrick.
Do you use Siri?
No, fuck Siri. So she's the worst.
You should ask Siri what your favorite movie is. Siri, what is my favorite film?
No, why?
I want to see what she says.
Ask her film?
No, what your favorite film is.
I don't even
is.
Know how to recall Siri.
Actually, I don't either.
Well, I wonder what is that? That's weird. I just hold down the button and Amazon pops up?
Logan, how do I...
Here we go. Siri, what's my favorite film? Oh, Christ. This is awful.
It's good, bud.
Siri, what's... Don't ever say that. Siri, what's my favorite film? No, it's not.
I've never turned Siri on. No, I don't even know.
Okay, what are we doing? What are we? Is this 2014? Are we just trying out our new Siris?
I don't know if she would reveal something embarrassing about you.
What? She just starts playing music.
What if she started playing your favorite film? What if Grouper started playing?
I do talk to Alexa at home quite a bit. I like her, but Siri, I
What is the difference between Alexa and
Siri, what's my favorite film?
Did it just start playing porn?
No, it's playing Huey Lewis in the fucking news.
This is great.
This is not even in my library.
What is Back to the Future?
All right. All right, come on. We're torturing people.
Sorry.
People are dropping like flies.
A little digression.
Shut up, Siri. Whoa.
I blame myself.
It's playing the film vault.
Oh.
Top 5 drug addicts.
It's Anderson. This is Brian.
Holy shit!
All up in your ears.
Is Doug Benson on this episode?
Let's start with this song.
Oh, Brian. What the fuck?
Oh,
that
no.
is very odd.
Wow. Siri knows us. What if she's a fan?
She's in my... That episode's in my library from the way 97.1 days because
I just transferred
everything from my computer onto my phone.
We used to play the music off the audio vault. Whatever we want.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very different sounding drug episode. Yeah, because we did top 5 drug episodes.
That makes sense. I wasn't putting
very different together. Sounding Brian back then. He sounded very, like
that's. I would say pre-tumor, but it's pre-tumor treatment. I had a tumor at that point.
Yeah, well, it also
that's
sounded
crazy.
Like you're not ascended yet.
Oh, really? I sounded a little boyish,
a little bit girlish.
Hi.
Hi. All right, let's do the relationship. Come on, we've wasted.
Kind of
want
to listen to the episode.
Should we do that?
No,
check it out.
No, we should not.
Just play
we do need a capsule.
Oh,
next week.
Have we done top 5 drug addicts?
We did drug addicted characters.
Yeah. No, I mean, have we replayed this episode?
Oh, no, we haven't yet. There's two versions of that because there's that version and then there's the one we did for Ace Broadcast.
No, we do this one. This one's good.
Okay.
I don't want that.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, this is good times. Happy accent. Thank you, Siri. You did something by mistake. Very good.
What is my favorite episode of the Film Vault?
Hi everyone, Brian here. I'm talking about top, top 5 drug dealers.
I might have to cut into it a little late though because I don't know if we had the rights to use that song.
I doubt very Come much on. That we're gonna.
Dude, there was a company that I can't say that, but it's true. 3 years they were giving a show away as a podcast before they got and it was giant before anyone found out about it. 3 years, millions of downloads. So I'm not worried about Huey and his Lewis or his news.
Top 5 movies that influenced our relationships. Why did you glom onto this one so far? Because you were talking to the listener and you thought of a few while you're having.
Yeah, I was half done with my homework, so that's always a plus.
That's nice. I had trouble.
And I think it's good. Right, so here's how the conversation went with Diana and I when she brought this up. And I will give you another plug, but I can't remember the name of the show at the moment. Sorry.
Oh, I'll look it up. She tweeted me earlier today.
She does a show that's related to films and how they are consumed. In regards to relationships and whatnot.
Here it is. Happily Ever Aftermath. Happily Ever Aftermath.
Yes.
At HEAM Cast.
And you know what? While we're at it, just because this has been such an abomination, this segment in particular, Brian, I spoke to a very, very fantastic listener named Known. Known. His name is spelled N-O-N.
Really?
And it's actually pronounced Known.
Known?
Known.
Easy alone.
Known.
It's not non.
And he, speaking of cheeky, Known was a little bit cheeky. I was having some depression last week. I didn't really talk much about it, but yeah. Somehow Known kind of pulled it out of me and I got pretty pabby on the episode. I was, you know, we were going back and forth. He also suffers from some depression.
So he recognized the signs.
Perhaps, but we were talking all sorts of stuff. He came like ready with a couple of Chuck Klosterman hypotheticals.
Uh-huh.
It was a very fun conversation. I talked a lot groupers.
Where's Known from? What is it? What kind of name is Known?
It's his parents named him that. It's a religious thing.
Okay.
But he's not religious. We talked a lot about that. And a lot about groupers and how I feel about it and what's going on and with the depression and all that stuff. At the end of the episode, Brian, at the end of the phone call, he's like, oh, by the way, I do a podcast and I was recording at my end too. May I post this? So I'm like, what am I going to say? No now, but I was pretty candid. And the name of his show is Joy Sandwich. So if you want to hear me be a little pabby bitch over there.
Wow.
Very, very candid. I told him.
You didn't even know it was going up on his show.
I had no idea.
You were caught off guard.
Joy Sandwich.
You got to think back over anything you said that may have been cut out. I guess you can use it. Just please cut out the part about me.
I just put my head down and move on and hope for the best. All right, let's do our actual show now, Brian.
5-1, movies that influence our relationships. I'm very curious to hear yours.
Very curious.
My number one is controversial. Very much controversial.
I like episodes where we don't have to do research. You know, this is like all internal research. It's all like going through the files.
This is actually harder for me.
Really?
Yeah.
I had to struggle to get my last couple, and then last minute, Brian, I kicked one off the list because I thought of another one that that I should have thought of immediately. But
how was the list of top five? Were there interesting submissions?
It was all pretty predictable, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Interesting. That's
predictable. But we do have a solid. We have a top five for sure.
Okay.
It's we're obviously the product of our era, so you know, sure. It's not like a movie last year was going to have influenced my take on relationships.
I noted the age I was when I saw these movies. I don't know if you were able to do that.
I can do that pretty quick here. All right, why don't you start it off?
Number five for me. My most recent movie on my list. All other ones are more in the past. But a movie
Solo.
I saw.
Is it Solo?
It is not Solo. It did not. Actually, it did impact me in my relationships, just not top five impact. You know what I mean? Maybe like seven or eight. Number five for me.
50 Shades of Grey.
No.
No?
No. Well.
I'm going to stop this guessing game.
No joke. There's no joke entries. This is my most earnest list.
Oh, this is earnest. It's, one of them in particular is going to seem like a joke, but it's not. Mm. And it's sad.
Okay.
Move on.
Number five. Strangely enough, not a great movie. The Breakup.
Oh.
The Breakup with Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn.
There is some actual great insight in that movie.
There is some great insight in
the Lemons.
Movie. The Lemons, the I want you to want to do laundry, or whatever it was. He's like, yeah. I don't want to. Why would I want to? I want you to want to.
Dishes, I think it was the dishes.
Dishes, whatever it was. A menial task.
Yeah.
Then there's, of course, a very high concept middle where they're living together, but they're broken up, and that's just silliness. It
happens more often than you'd imagine.
No, I understand that, but that's not the insightful part of the movie. That's sort of the silly comedy part of the movie. But The Breakup, I was 28 years old-ish when it came out in 2006, and I saw it. I think I was either going through a breakup at the time, or I was just about to go through. You know, you can, in a relationship, you know when you're about to go through a breakup. Like a lot of the times, the relationship starts to fall apart.
Yeah.
You know, like this is
usually when the threesomes happen.
This is ending soon.
Right.
That's exactly what happened.
I know this person?
You know,
I think I do.
Actually, you did.
Did she enjoy watching beheadings on the computer?
No. What?
Really? Yeah. What? One of your girlfriends did. It was very disturbing.
What?
Very disturbing, Brian. She'd come visit you at the studio and she wanted to watch. Like, Taliban beheadings.
This is not that person.
You know who I'm talking about?
I do. This is not that person.
She was deeply disturbed.
One, two, three of mine relate to a specific relationship. Like ooh. I learned, I relate these movies, moments in these movies and the movies in general to a specific relationship.
Okay.
And this is one of them because I was going through a breakup at the time.
The Jerk. And is that one of the movies? No.
No. No. And when you... Breakups are different at different points of your life. Breakups when you're a teenager hurt in a different way than they hurt when you're 28 years old. And when I was 28, it hurt in a different way, and it was more of a like, I know what this is. I've been through this, and I'm going through it again, and it sucks. And I had not yet met Christy, obviously. And I remember seeing the Emma – I'm going to talk about the end of the breakup, because it's, number one, it's not that great of a movie, and number two, it's 11 years old. You can track it down if you're desperate to, if you haven't seen it yet. The characters break up, and they spend the whole movie breaking up and barely tolerating each other. And at the very last scene, I don't know if you remember this, they break up and they go their separate ways in a tearful way, and it's like, we've hurt each other enough. We've waged war on each other, almost a War of the Roses kind of way. Not quite as absurd, but like that. We fast forward in the final scene to, like, I don't know, a year later or whatever it is, and they run into each other on the streets, and of the streets of New York or Chicago, wherever they are, and they have this very real reunion. It's not silly. It's not played for Hollywood romance or Hollywood laughs. It's this very real moment where they meet on the streets and they have this sort of interaction, this moment together where they're like, hey, you look great. How are you? You've lost weight. You look great. I love your hair, this and that. Mm-hmm. And they have this moment where I remember seeing it, and it was such an innocuous but sweet moment, a real moment. And I was like, oh, that's right. Relationships can break up, and breakups can be awful.
But person doesn't die.
But it can, yeah, but you don't die, and the person doesn't die. Like, you can be friends later on, or you can be friendly, or you can you'll survive this. It's such a obvious thing now, you know, looking back on it. But at 20 years old, you know, I was going through a pretty serious breakup, and it was a helpful
movie. Was I there for you, buddy? Was I there? Was I supportive for you?
You were there, but not supportive. You were physically there, but if anything, you exacerbated.
Like, I knew you, and we spent time together every day at work. But
right.
Oh, I didn't even know you were going through a breakup.
Actually, what happened was,
I'm like, I don't care. Please don't tell me anymore.
I every once in a while, I would try to bring it up. Be like, Anderson, I'm actually kind of going through some stuff right now. What happened was, and you'd throw your hoodie up.
That sounds about right.
Sorry, you wouldn't have to actually see.
It's funny how these little moments, though. All right, so. Hopefully you're not going to wax on every single one quite as much as you did there. That was a lot.
That'll
of
be the most waxing.
Okay, good.
Because it's also the most not obscure.
Get the hardest part out of the way.
It's the less. Well, no, there's one actually.
Number five for me, and this is doesn't take a whole lot of waxing, and it is just a little moment in the film that stands out. I don't know if Reality Bites has ever shown up on this.
Christy
on this
mentioned
film.
That.
Reality Bites.
Because I was like, I gotta think of five movies, but she's like, oh, Reality Bites for me. I'm like, oh, okay.
Ooh, look at that. Huh? This is Christy.
That's right.
She.
Let me guess, you have a conversation later.
You just saw the breakup. maybe you're gonna have a little.
Son of a bitch.
You neither one of you gonna die. Maybe you guys will see each other again on the street.
We can remain friendly.
I'll be with her.
Hey, Anderson. Oh, hi, Christy.
No, Reality Bites. Okay, this is 1994, directed by Ben Stiller.
Was this his debut as a director?
Very well could be.
I think it was.
This stood out to me so much, and I wanted to be that guy. But I don't know if you know this about me, Brian, but I wanted to be the guy that, like, played the field and didn't give a fuck. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted to be that guy.
Yeah, don't hit the player, hit the game.
Yeah. I wouldn't use that terminology, Brian, but
that's what you would have said.
Ethan Hawke, I think it's towards the beginning of this movie. He's walking out after a one-night stand, mm-hmm. and he's, like, waving goodbye, kind of like, you know, he's kind of, like, hungover, and he looks disheveled, but he looks cool because he's a cool guy playing Troy Dyer, and just a cool character, too. And this feels as much, doesn't feel like a Ben Stiller movie. It feels more like a Linklater film.
Sure.
It feels very, I'm Audi 5000.
It's very Gen X. I remember it being very Gen X.
So he's walking down the stairs of this, like, little outside apartment building, and he has her phone number, and he's about to put it in his front shirt pocket. And, like, as soon as, like, you know, he's out of eyesight, he just kind of tosses to the side. Like, I'll never talk to her. I got what I wanted.
Yep.
And I love that character. I love that move. Now, this character is an arc, obviously, and a whole lot of things happening. He's, like, trying to discover life and the meaning of life and relationships and what they really mean. But part of me at that time wanted to be that guy so bad. And I remember actually thinking about Ethan Hawke's character, Troy Dyer, while I was on dates. And it definitely had a bad influence, but an influence nonetheless. Oh, that Troy. He was a cool guy.
So this was not a positive influence on you?
No, it was negative. It was like, hey, if Troy can do it, hey, those guys are out there.
I never thought about negative influence.
I'm bad, though. I was terrible. Like, I would have one-night stands, and I would never have sex with them again.
You monster.
I would never have sex with them again, but a lot of the time I'd feel, not every time, but a lot of time I'd feel so guilty, I would still forge a relationship and speak with these women, sometimes for years.
Just out of guilt.
I would just, like, you know, be their friend and, like, be on the phone, and some of them, like, live far away, and I would just, like, every time they call, I'd feel guilty. I was a bad, like, player. I tried to be, but I was bad at it. Yeah.
Did you, I was going to ask you a question.
It gets worse.
Oh, really?
Yeah, go ahead.
Number four for me. I didn't get a clip. This would have been a good example of me not handling my clips. Because in 1997, I saw a film that became more important to me later as I experienced a version of what the main character played by Ben Affleck went to in Chasing Amy.
Oh.
Chasing Amy.
You know what? Not bad. Not bad.
Not every guy. I can't say every guy, but a lot of guys.
I like Chasing Amy. I like
good, it. Good movie. I own Chasing Amy. I think the lesson. Well, I'll get to that in a second. I think a lot of guys can identify. Well, I won't wax.
Layered wax.
Mm. I think a lot of guys can identify with the idea that what Ben Affleck sort of tortured himself with, which was his character's, the Joey Lauren Adams character's past. He's dating a girl who is a lesbian, but she also has a very colorful sexual history. Mm-hmm. And he learns about it unbeknownst to her, and he can't let it go.
Right.
And it ultimately poisons their relationship.
I get that for sure. I've been there.
Yeah, as have I. This was one of the movies that reminds me of a specific relationship. And
it's weird, too. It's girl to girl. Like, I've never felt that way with my current wife. But I would never felt that way with Jillian.
I completely agree.
But I felt that way with many girlfriends.
But the lesson that I learned was from caring so much like I did about one relationship to the version of how I care now is leave the past in the past. Mm. The past is what happened then. Right. It is hard to do, but you're with this person here now, not then. You're not with that person. You're with this person. That's you think about yourself at a younger age. You're not the same person that
right.
you are.
You know how bad I was crazy. Like, I was fucking crazy with a few girls, and I think a lot of these were damaged girls, damaged women.
Sure, because
they were
your dance partners.
And the idea of, like, them being taken advantage of before me by these guys. Like, I got so crazy with, I guess it's jealousy. It's psychopathy, for sure. I mean, it's craziness. You know that thing where you hear, like, your body regenerates cells and whatnot? Like, every 7 years?
Sure.
Like, I remember using that as some kind of comfort. Like, she's not even the same body anymore. Like, everything's been...
Yes.
Like, that's how crazy
that's
I would...
That's the kind of hysteria...
That's how insane I would get.
I totally
Brian.
Identify that. Not that level, but I know that kind of hysteria.
I would get fucking nuts with it. Yeah. Crazy.
Totally. There's a great
scene...
That was
comforting. Like... Not the same human being anymore.
There's a great scene in Chasing Amy where they have a sort of blowout in the parking lot of the hockey rink, remember? And they hash it all out, and he shoots himself. It's a very long. It would have been too long for a clip, but he shoots himself in the foot emotionally.
Right?
It's very draining.
And you can see
she does a lot of crying.
See the full cast and full crew and camera in the reflection of the,
oh, is that true?
Of the window numerous times.
Oh, Christ, yes. I never even looked. Yeah. Anyway, I never even bothered. I matured enough as a person, as a man, that by the time Christy and I got together, I never even bothered asking about her past.
I think she's also just the right person for you.
I agree, that's your business, much as mine is mine.
Jillian was one of the first and only girls that I ever dated or have been with that I wasn't saving from something.
Oh, yeah, I can identify.
You know, I lived across the street from Joey Lauren Adams.
Did you really?
Yeah, till about a couple years ago.
Really?
She lived like right kitty corner across
the street. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
The house you're in now?
Yeah. Oh, I used to see her all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
What's she doing slumming it?
Yeah, she was kind of slumming it. I wanted to ask her that, yeah.
What happened?
Here, number four for me. Oh, this is a good one. Oh, it's a good one. I can't really get too into it.
Why?
Because I don't want to give anything away.
Is there pending
movie.
Charges?
1993, a little movie starring Christian Slater, Brian. Hmm. Any ideas?
It's either Heather's or True Romance.
It's neither.
Oh.
Christian Slater is
Pump
Adam.
Volume?
Christian Slater is Adam. And Caroline, played by Marissa Tomei, talking about Untamed Heart, 1993.
Oh, my God. Is that the one where he...
Love this movie. Not only did it make me want to fall in love and, you know, work in a diner, but it made me want to get a transplant. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say anything more. But it's one of the most...
You were pretty close after you fell off the
One of the most ridiculous endings, but it works somehow. You forgive it.
Doesn't
because
he catch a hockey puck with his bare hands?
He does. There's a lot of, like, very... primal things about this guy, but he's like dark and he's brooding, kind of like
Christian Slater,
kind
of
like Tom Hardy's character, like mysterious, like Tom Hardy's character in Warrior. Remember how mysterious he was? Like you don't know much about. He's just like the busboy. He cleans up the dishes at the diner where Marissa Tomei and her cheeky friend Rosie Perez work. It made me want to work at a diner. It made me want to fall in love with the waitress at the diner. I love this movie. I loved Untamed Heart. All the way to the ridiculous end.
You love the romantic notions.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. This is a movie. And I tried to be the brooding.
This is your pabbiest.
I tried to be the brooding, quiet type for a while. It didn't really work for me, but I tried it. Probably in part because of this movie.
Hmm.
Yeah.
How long did the brooding Anderson phase last?
Well, it was really easy during my thick meth phase. Because
you brooded a lot when I knew you at level
93. Well, I had nothing to say to you.
Okay.
93, I was doing. I was on a lot, hopped up on a lot of stimulants, Brian. And you get to a point where you stop talking and you just kind of go into a hole and you don't talk at all. So it worked pretty good for there. For that era.
So it worked hand in hand what you were doing.
I'm like, hey, I might as well be like Adam from Untamed Heart.
I'm gonna make this work for me.
Because I'm so methed up, I can't even talk. I'm in a meth hole over here. Ugh. It wasn't always meth. It was coke when I was, feels like around my birthday, I got a little birthday money.
Sure, celebrate. enjoy, involve everyone in the party.
It could be coffee. Now it's coffee. All right.
Number three. If there's any crossover, it's gonna be this one, I think. I saw this when I was a young man, maybe 11 or 12 or 13, and it did not register. Did not stick the way it should. Did not stick the landing. And I blame that much more on me than the movie, because I saw it years later, and I was like maybe 16 or 17, like about to leave high school, maybe mid-late high school, and Say Anything.
Landed
the punch.
Good one.
Landed the punch. I did not get it. I did, because when I saw it the first time.
Why'd you see it? Why would you see something like this as a young boy?
You know why? Because I had older cousins, and two older female cousins, and they were like, oh, you got to see it. You'll love it. Because they were, 17 or 18.
Stupid. 11-year-old boy got to love Say Anything.
Well, I was precocious. I liked older movies. I mean, I like movies that were not little kid movies. But I didn't get
still,
this.
No.
You're right. I didn't get it. And I was like, all right, well, maybe I'll get it someday. And I did, in fact, get it someday. It's one of my favorite movies.
So after you watched Vanilla Sky, you went back and...
And said, oh, this guy's done other things?
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I do have a clip from this movie, Logan. Oh, get it ready. It's a great... The audio's terrible, but it's maybe recorded off a TV or something. But it's a great line that always stuck with me. And
Heart.
Anderson, you should put this on the list of what to show little Atticus there to give him a
I'm gonna, once he's 11, the first 11
years
11th birthday.
Old, yeah. My son, you're 11?
Yeah, sit down. You're going to love
birthday,
this.
Happy birthday. Sit down and watch
I heard secondhand from two 17-year-old girls in the late 80s that you're going to love this.
Here's some great advice. I think from Lily Taylor. Yeah.
Oh, Corey.
Yeah, that's right.
What you're talking about?
Lloyd, why do you have to be like this?
Because I'm a guy. I have pride.
No, you're not a guy.
I am.
No. The world is full of guys. Be a man. Don't be a guy.
That's a great line.
Yeah,
don't be a guy.
She was great. She was like the clairvoyant.
She was wise beyond her teenage years.
She was like the Oracle in the Matrix.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
she wrote how many songs? They were all about the one guy.
So good. Yeah, that guy was pretty sweet though. I like that guy. I don't blame her for having a crush on that guy.
I wrote 35 songs. They're all about Dan or whatever it was.
What was that guy's name?
Oh, it was like Bill. You lie.
Yeah. What was his name? Oh.
It was a one-syllable name, I think.
They were good songs, too. Catchy.
All right, I'll look up the name.
Will you look it up?
Yeah, next movie.
All right, number three. This is going to feel like...
Hey, let's just not know.
But for the sake of the show, you know what I'm saying? I'm like an alcoholic. It's like, well, it's my birthday.
Come on,
give me a shot.
Just once, man. Give us a name.
Number three for me. This came up while talking to Diana on my chat with Andy, and she, brought up this as a possible topic and asked questions, and this one actually came up, and... It's not stunt, Brian. I don't have this on here as a joke. This is real.
I'll be the judge of that.
This is scary. Taxi Driver, 1976. Travis Bickle, Taxi Driver, 1976.
I don't like this.
What you don't think of when you think of Taxi Driver is the romantic inclinations or would-be romantic. There's a lot of romance that would be romance gone wrong in this movie, right? I saw this when I was probably 13, 14 years old is when I really kind of got into the De Niro and the gang started watching this and... I'm assuming most all of our audience has seen it. Now, Betsy's kind of like out of his league. He's a taxi driver, and she's out of his league.
Sorry, is this Cybill Shepherd character?
Cybill Shepherd. Beautiful, beautiful woman. And she's working with Albert Brooks.
Interesting courting technique.
She works with Albert Brooks. She's for a candidate who's running for president, I believe. Or he's trying to get in the primaries to become... to run for president. Anyway, he's something. Maybe the governor. I've seen this movie so many times. I don't care. I don't sweat the details when it comes to the politics over there, Brian. But he courts the taxi driver courts this woman and who's way out of his league, and she agrees to go out on a date with him because she kind of likes the cut of his chip, and he takes her to an adult movie house.
His idea of a first date.
He was so he had no movies to rely on like I did, like Brian and I did. That he thought that, oh, I don't know, I see other adults in there, I see other couples in there. It's where guys take girls to see movies. They take them to see people banging.
I see people walking there together, arm in arm.
So obviously that is not the part that I took to heart.
Oh, what? I believe the guy's name is Joe.
Joe makes sense. Joe sounds right. That is not the part of Taxi Driver that that I took to heart. It is the part with Iris, who was the 15-year-old hooker played by Jodie Foster.
This is getting worse.
It is. I know. I realize that. And I don't know if you remember how well you know this movie, Brian, but he comes across her on the street with Harvey Keitel. She's trying to get in his car. She's trying to get away from Harvey Keitel. Harvey Keitel kind of rips her out of the cab. She leaves a $5 bill. He becomes obsessed with this Iris, this 15-year-old. Or actually, she's supposed to be 12.
Oh, 13 or something.
She's 12.
Yeah.
A little piece of chicken. That's what he calls you. But he keeps the $5 bill, almost like it's a trophy at first. You're like,
a souvenir.
And that's Travis Bickle, played by Robert De Niro, the taxi driver. And then later in the movie, he goes and he pays to have her services. And he goes up and, he doesn't have her services. Because she's a little girl and he sees that. And she's damaged goods. And he doesn't want to be one of the scumbags. He wants to help her. He wants to save her. And I...
Oh, Anderson.
Fucking...
I can see...
Love
prime Anderson.
That.
Yeah.
Not that they were, so far apart in age, and it would have been, obviously... But there's a lot of fucking gross guys that were doing it. Harvey Keitel was banging her, you know?
So you started prowling the streets for 12-year-old hookers.
No, but there are a lot of girls that I pride myself on to this day that I've slept in their beds. I've spent the night at their house. I've talked to them hours into the night.
And you just did anal.
Never... Never touched them. And so I remember a girl saying, "You're the first guy to ever sleep in my bed that didn't try anything." I'm like, "Well, how many guys are sleeping in your bed?" But I took on that role.
Yeah, that's a leading question.
I like the Travis character a lot, how he was, not in it for the poon, Brian, but indeed. In it to save, right?
That's right. He had noble intentions.
He did. He had very noble intentions. And I think that it
his
really
method
did.
Spun out a little bit. But
I think it really did reflect on, I reflected on that. And I think it did have some kind of influence. You know what we didn't talk about at the top of this, it came up when I was talking to Diana, is women's, here's another sweeping generalization that I might get emails from, but it came up with her for sure. And she agrees that when women see these movies and, they zero in on a romantic movie, they're trying to think, how is this going to influence me when I meet Mr. Right or meet that shining, the knight in shining armor, right?
Sure.
Who is going to come and rescue her or sweep her off her feet, right? That's what they're trying to pick up and learn. For men, at least for myself.
How to be that knight.
How to be, not that knight to any particular girl, but how to be the guy that everybody wants.
Gotcha.
Just the cool guy.
Cast the widest net.
Right?
I heard an interesting part. I heard a study about this in college, and it was something along the lines of that, many women get the same feelings chemically that guys do when they go see action movies and when they go see romantic comedies.
Really?
Yeah,
it makes a lot of sense.
I don't get it with
chemical
either.
Reaction. Obviously, not with every woman, because some women like a lot of action movies the same way guys do, but chemically, something is happening in their brains that they're reacting in a similar way.
That leads me to something else, which. Isn't really that related, but here's I'll also get in trouble for this one. I know the wife hates it when I say this, but I came up with a theory that I know a lot of very smart women out there that really enjoy their Real Housewives or
yes, Christy is the prime example. She's very smart.
How do women fight?
She loves
how do men fight?
Housewives.
How do men fight?
Just duke it out in the driveway.
Right, right. And guys like just watching action movies, right? They like this UFC, all this stuff,
A couple of pops in the chin, they have a couple of pops of beer.
How do women fight?
The gossip behind the back,
catty, right?
Cattiness.
So watching these reality shows, I think it's kind of like it's like watching UFC for them, but for us, it's just boring. Like we don't get it because we don't want to be catty. But it's like they're it's like watching like the highest athletes, like the most talented athletes in their field,
most talented snipers.
Yeah, I think that I think I might be onto something.
You're not incorrect.
The wife does not like to hear this because
I think she knows it's a little true. Your wife's obviously very smart too.
And I've not understood why these really smart ladies love to watch these ridiculous shows. That are
said the exact same thing about Christy, and I think it's that they spend all day thinking hard, and it's like at the end of the day, I need to shift the balance. I need to fill it up with something easy and light.
That's what Jillian says. She just wants to not think, just throw something on. But you know what you're thinking.
Yeah, but you're thinking more about that.
All right, so Taxi Driver is my number three, and that's no joke.
Good call. Yeah. Number two, feel very strongly about this. What about my number one if it hadn't been a very controversial selection coming up soon?
Oh, Chris.
Number two for me. Saw when I was 18 years old. Same age I was when I saw Chasing Amy a couple of months before. Saw a little movie in theaters called Swingers. Swingers.
Rabbit.
What happened to the rabbit? Oh, yeah, you're a bunny. You're a bunny with those big old claws. So many great lessons in this movie. Mm. You're a bunny. She's got these big old claws.
How not to talk about Vegas is my number one
lesson. Yeah, that has nothing to do with relationships. But I did learn some lessons about Vegas. I tell you that much. Don't sit at the $100 tables. Uh-huh. At that age, anyway. Swingers, so many great lessons. I remember seeing this with, so there was, this was an age where I...
Can't we just move on?
No. They have a clip. There's an age, Anderson. I'm sure even Cool Anderson, a Cool Anderson cast in The Wide Net, you probably had infatuations at certain points. Girls you were really into, maybe they weren't quite as into you.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Sure.
Well, no, like they wouldn't even know.
Oh, you were just from afar.
Yeah.
Oh, I was worse.
I was so bad when I was like in high school. Like I'd find out that they liked me, and I would do nothing about it. But I would know exactly. Like I'd look forward to seeing what they were wearing that day. Like I knew their schedule by heart.
See, no,
I wouldn't talk to them.
You tell me, okay, was I better or worse than that? Because I would have the infatuation, and I would like friend up to them. You know,
that's
end up
worst.
In friend zone.
Yeah, no.
No, I genuinely wanted to be friends. I wanted to be boyfriends.
You wanted to be close, so you could smell their hair and like you know spank bank it. Brian, that's conniving.
No, I disagree. I know what I wanted.
Like I'll be here. I know it happens all the time.
Yeah.
And I know that plenty of people listen.
It was way more innocent. It was like, why doesn't she like me? Yeah. That kind of, it was more sad and pathetic than it was conniving. Trust me. So Swingers, I remember seeing it with a girl I was really into. And she had wanted nothing to do with me.
Right.
Wanted nothing to do with me, but we were friends. So we went
You're
to
like
see
her
it
wing boy.
With a couple of other friends. Yeah, of course. I was absolutely. She was looking at other guys and I was like, why don't you like
right.
me? Uh-huh. I still have some hair. Uh-huh. And so we're watching Swingers. And I think there was a line about like, the girls don't like the nice guy. Don't be a nice guy. Yeah. Be the asshole.
Oh.
And she looked over at me. She's like, don't ever do that. And I was like, okay.
Fuck you, bitch.
I was like, okay. Oh. But then I was like, wait, you're with an asshole. I was like, wait, you're like into assholes.
But you kind of are.
No, but I'm not an asshole to girls.
You're like a subtle asshole.
I'm an asshole
like
to people
don't
like,
realize you're an asshole until they hang
exactly.
out with you for a while.
I'm an asshole to like people, like friends.
Like people know I'm an asshole, like, upon meeting me,
yeah,
right?
I'm an asshole.
But for you, like it takes a while for
coworkers
people to realize.
And employees like you, but not to women. I'm
right.
I'm trying to date. Mm-hmm. No, I'm quite nice actually. But here's a clip from Swingers.
It's fake though, so it's not sincere.
Stop it. After all the great lessons in Swingers, the greatest thing I took away from this movie long term, because like the how to meet girls in bars and be the bunny or she's the bunny and you're the bear, that all kind of comes and goes, right. And maybe in your early 20s. The clip that stays with me is between Ron Livingston and Jon Favreau when he goes to visit him in the apartment, and he's so depressed after the breakup.
Sitting against the wall.
Yeah, and he's got the unshaven for like 3 days, and Ron Livingston shows up and he's talking him off the ledge, a little advice to his heartbreak. Broken friend.
You're gonna get over it.
Jesus Christ.
How did you get over it? I mean, how long did it take? Sometimes it still hurts. You know how it is, man. It's like you wake up every day and it hurts a little bit less, and then you wake up one day and it doesn't hurt at all. And the funny thing is that this is kind of weird, but it's like you almost miss that pain.
You miss the pain?
Yeah, for the same reason that you miss her. Because you lived with it for so long.
That's such an insightful way to look at a breakup and way to look at the pain that comes afterwards. And I remembered that many times throughout my life, and it helped me. And
did it really? Because you appreciated the pain? You're like, hey, you're going to miss this.
No, you, the pain becomes part of your life. Like, you know, that pain immediately after breakup. And as it's, as it kind of goes away, you're like, you feel better, of course, but at the same time, you're also like, oh yeah, that's a part of my life. Now it's gone a little bit, much like
part of yourself is going away too. That there's that. What does this have to do with the friend zone? Where do we go with the friend zone?
That was a different part of the movie. Throughout the movie, they're giving him advice because he's trying to get over this girl.
So that's part of it.
And
as
that is like the ultimate piece of advice that I took from this movie.
I see. That says a lot. All right.
Why does it say a lot? That's a good piece of advice.
You know what? Really good one.
I'll teach that
been?
To Atticus when I take over for you.
How are you taking over for me?
You'll be dead. What? Come on. You'll do something horrible.
Bellflower would have been a really good one, too.
Oh, that's right.
It really,
But it didn't influence your life. It reflected a truth.
It reflected truth, and I think you could use it as an influencer in the sense that, it would help you cope with it better and maybe change your behavior a little bit because, you're not alone. But God, that was authentic and real and truthful. The feelings a young male goes through when his heart is ripped out of his chest and stomped on. Oh, it happens so often too, Brian.
True.
We can't. As men, we can't process it. We can't deal with it. We're going to just shove it down.
That's right. Just get into a fight. Just punch someone.
Number two for me. This is the one, a late addition. I don't know why, how it wasn't just boom right in the top of my head immediately. But Harold and Maude. My God. Absolutely, yes.
So what did this how did this impact relationships?
It's kind of like Shallow Hal might have with some people. It made you realize that, hey, man, it's not about what's on the outside. It's about what's on the inside. And it's about beauty and love. And, yeah, man, this is made by Hal Ashby, like a tragic hippie.
You assigned this to me, and I'm very glad you did. I like this movie.
And it really makes you – I think it makes anyone who sees it from beginning to end kind of appreciate and see love in a different guise than you would have before, especially if you see it when you're younger, which I did. It made me think how not only, you know, because of the age difference, that's like, you know, what you think of when you see the movie. And once again, we talked about this before. If you have not seen it and you're going off of the poster, ignore that poster.
The poster is bunk.
Brutal. However, there is one where it's like he's hanging himself with his tie, and there's a different poster. But the one that's on the Netflix or whatever.
Right. That one's garbage. It's just like, I believe someone did a parody of that for the film Bought a long time ago.
Bud Cort and Ruth Gordon kind of like staring shocked, looking off like a Spielberg stare. It's a very odd poster.
Yes, it represents nothing. It's in the film.
No, we digress. But it made me think beyond superficiality for the first time ever, probably at a very young age. I don't know, ever, but maybe is in really... In relationship,
they put it in dramatic terms.
In relationship to relationships.
Sure.
Ooh, look at that. Mm-hmm. It made me think about it. Hey, they're just happy together because they get each other and they connect each other. Who cares about age? And it really came in handy when I turned 40 and I wanted to date a 12-year-old.
Okay, so that's probably good then, you know, that it shows you that love is possible. And
I always
respect.
I just say, well, hey, look at Harold and Maude. It's been out for a
long
time.
Watch this and come back to me.
Sure, this movie is almost as old as I am now, but... why don't you pay attention to what it said? No, honestly, though, it's a great, great little movie. It's one of my five favorite movies ever made.
Really?
I love
that's saying
it.
Something.
I absolutely love it.
I very much enjoyed it. I'm glad you assigned it to me. Number one, high controversy.
Oh, here's... Now, let me ask you this. Do robots fuck? Do they,
spoiler,
they screw, I guess?
Just play the clip then. No, don't play the clip.
Is there a clip? You got three clips?
I got a clip. I got three clips.
Stop with your clips.
Logan, you know what's coming up. How bad is this?
He looked disappointed.
I'm outraged.
You're outraged. How bad is it going to get?
It's going to get pretty bad.
Okay.
You're not going to like this, Anderson.
Can I go pee?
No. Pee. You need to be here for this.
Why is that?
Because I need to. I need you to.
Why do you like to enrage me? Why is that fun for you?
I don't want to.
Do you ever see me trying to enrage you?
Yes, all the time.
How?
You assign me terrible movies all the time.
No, but it's not trying to. I'm trying to damage you. I'm trying to disturb and damage you.
I feel
you.
Like we're splitting hairs.
I'm not trying to upset
like,
you.
I feel like it's semantics. Number one for me. You know, I have a catchphrase on this show.
Yeah, film vault.
That's one of them. I also say this is not TV vault. But just once.
What?
You've brought up TV shows on your top
five. Oh, yeah. No, not on my top five. Yes, that's also Rans. I've never, ever done that because that's sacrilegious.
Number one. The first time my mind was blown in terms of like relationships on the screen, it's on the small screen. The Wonder Years finale.
What, Brian? You can't do this.
May 12th, 1993.
So you don't have a complete list.
I don't have a complete list. I told you how. Well, you know, number five would have been if I had bumped it up, Just Friends. So count yourself lucky. The Wonder Years finale.
I do, absolutely.
The Wonder Years finale from 1993 saw a 14-year-old balding Brian watching Kevin Arnold, played by Fred Savage, narrate what happened to his family and his loved ones years after, and in the ensuing years after the show ended. And he's doing a sort of, you know, where are they now? But it's in real time. It's slow motion. It's very emotional. It's like, oh, mom, you know, ended up doing this, and dad ended up, you know, dying 2 years later, and Wayne took over the family business. It's very sweet. And then he gets to Winnie, and it's like, oh, Winnie, the childhood sweethearts, the ones we saw kiss when they were 10, 11, 12 years old, whatever it was. And here they are, you know, off to the sunset together. It's a very sweet moment. It's an Americana. They're at 4th of July. They're at a 4th of July, like, Main Street Parade, a small town, 1970 Main Street Parade on the 4th of July. And here's what Kevin said when he got to what happened to him and Winnie.
Winnie left the next summer to study art history in Paris. Still, we never forgot our promise. We wrote to each other once a week for the next 8 years. I was there to meet her when she came home, with my wife and my first son. 8 months old.
I remember hearing that, and my mind was blown. I was like, Kevin and Winnie did not get married? And I realized that it was an awakening moment for a very young and innocent balding Brian. It was that person that's your first love that might feel like the most intense love you've ever known might not be your forever love. So don't be too crushed when that first one ends, and it's going to end at some point, except for a very few small, you know, lucky amongst us.
Brian, it's a TV show.
I know, it's a TV show.
I'm not going to, you know, spend any time.
I throw myself in the mercy of the court.
Number one for me.
But this was a impactful relationship moment for me, seeing this at age 14.
Number one for me.
Number one.
You, once again, it was this 3-4 weeks in a row. Fucked me hard, Brian.
I did?
Yeah.
Say Anything on there?
Number one for me, Say Anything, yeah. Without a doubt. 1989, Say Anything. Cameron Crowe wrote and directed. This, too, feels like it could have been a Linklater film, but it's definitely got the schmaltiness and the feel-goodiness that only Cameron Crowe can do successfully at times. At other times, not so much. Aloha.
I thought we bought a zoo.
Number one for me, Say Anything. It is Lloyd Dobler is a character that I could absolutely relate to, that I was at that age too, where I was like, you know, falling in and out of love all the time and, you know, thinking things meant a lot more than they did.
Yeah, you assign a lot of meaning to things at that age.
He was a character that was a little bit pabby. They didn't try and make him be extra cool guy, but he was the perfect actor at the time to pull it off. And I absolutely love this movie. It made me want to like fall in love and get my heart broken. And I actually experienced things very similar to this with a girlfriend of mine going off to college and us having to break up. And it was heart-wrenching, but I had this movie to fall back on a little bit. And he was just true and real and honest. And I loved his patter. I loved the patter with Corey was great.
He had a great patter with the dad with, what's his name? John something. Damn it. The dad, the dad character, her dad.
Yeah, the Fraser's dad.
Yeah.
Fraser's dad.
That's right.
It's Fraser's dad, Brian.
Great patter. I agree. He was a genuine character, too. Like, you believed that character believed everything he said. Like, when he was talking enthusiastically about kickboxing, sport of the future.
Hey, but come on. You're ruining things even further. John Mahoney.
There you go.
John Mahoney. So here's some quotes. I was looking up John Mahoney. Like, doing that thing that I don't do anymore, but I had to do it. John Mahoney is the name of Fraser's dad. But here are some of his quotes. I didn't get the clips. I'd rather just say them myself. Here is Lloyd explaining what he wants to do beyond high school. He doesn't really think far down the road. He thinks with his heart. He's one of these guys, and most kids can definitely relate to this. You know, mapping out your whole future. You're just thinking about what's tomorrow, what's tonight, what's going on. Here's what he knows about himself and what he does and does not want to do. I don't want to sell anything, says Lloyd. But buy anything or process anything as a career. I don't want to sell anything bought or processed, or buy anything sold or processed, or process anything sold, bought, or processed, or repair anything sold, bought, or processed.
Or repair anything.
You know, as a career. I don't want to do that. He also says, I got a question. If you guys know so much about women, how come you're all down here at the gas and sip on a Saturday night completely alone, drinking beers with no women around anywhere?
By choice.
By choice. That's right, yeah. You know, Jeremy Piven sitting there on the corner. He was one of the fools at the gas and sip. And finally, maybe his most prophetic moment is kickboxing, sport of the future, which Brian already said.
That's right.
But it's true. I mean, here we are. What is it? 11, carry the one, 28 years later.
We can't get away from kickboxing.
UFC, man. I just had lunch by myself at a little sushi place, and UFC is all on every fight, every channel. I'm trying to, you know, enjoy a little tuna over here, and I got to watch some guy get his chiclets kicked out of his head.
Yeah, help us have more relaxing on the TV.
Kickboxing, sport of the future. He was absolutely right. That character just nailed it, hit it home. And I think it's important because I think it led a lot of douche fucks like myself. Not that I'm relying completely on movies. Obviously, you go with your heart and who you are as a person, but it showed that it was okay to actually. I think a lot of people from our generation, or my generation, watched this movie and said, "Oh, you know, that's the way to be. It's just be honest with yourself and the way you feel." I loved it. Love Lloyd. Love that movie.
He gave her his heart. She gave him a pen.
Give me a pen. Mm-hmm. Great movie.
It was a great movie.
Fantastic movie.
And I'm glad I saw it later in life.
Cameron Crowe's best work, probably. Probably his best work.
It's been all the sky, then Say Anything. Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Almost Famous, maybe.
What's the other good one?
He doesn't have any other good ones.
Oh, he doesn't have a good one.
No. No more good ones?
Elizabethtown. That's it.
Elizabethtown is not a good one.
By the way, you may be confused. For some reason, the Wonder Years finale used the Natural music, the music from the Natural.
Well, if you're talking about music in Wonder Years, it's been going on for years and years because they show them on the internet, but they didn't have the rights to the original music for the opening scenes or for a lot of the music that they used throughout episode. So they had to replace it with stopgaps. So I think that they might have gotten that sorted out with the newer stuff that's on Netflix or whatever, but I know for the longest time, the Wonder Years was not your Wonder Years from your childhood because they changed so much of the music.
I watched every episode of that show.
I could see you doing it.
It was always on before like Power Rangers, and I always hated it because it was boring.
But by that point, it was
I was like 6 years old, so.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to ask you a very inappropriate question, Brian, but I want you to be honest with me, all right? Lloyd Dobler would want you to be honest as well.
Okay.
How many times you rub one out there to old Winnie?
Winnie Cooper?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think ever. I don't think ever. I really don't think ever.
I bet you have.
Danny McKellar. Now you're talking.
Who's that?
The actress who played Winnie Cooper. No, I don't believe I ever did.
I didn't even talk about Ione Skye and
Ione. Married Ad-Rock.
Or Diane Court, as she was in the movie. But she was
a brain.
Perfect, too. She was perfectly cast. It was just such a well-cast, fun, honest, sweet movie. I loved it. Say Anything. Oh, who doesn't like Say Anything?
It's pretty great.
You know, you don't, and someone's in your life, they don't like Say Anything, get them out.
That's a real red flag.
Exercise that person from your life.
That's right. Now, listener top five. Let's hear what the listeners thought.
I got actually 7 films on this list because of some ties. First, we're going to start off with a 4-way tie.
Jerry Maguire. Holy fuck. How do we both forget Jerry Maguire?
I knew it.
I looked it up. I just looked it up. God, this feels good. I got to look things up only on the show. Elizabeth, it feels so good.
This is your window where you can look things up.
Oh, it's great. All right. Sorry, Logan.
4-way tie for number 4. We have When Harry Met Sally.
No.
Say Anything.
Yes.
What is that?
500 Days of Summer.
I'm surprised that wasn't on your list.
No.
I like that movie.
Dislike. Got an argument about it, too, with Joseph Gordon, Jogo. Sorry, Bill's Emporium. I'm going to talk about a celebrity here, but I didn't like it because she was a dick, and I didn't like how he just kept throwing himself
at her. Think Bill's Movie Emporium gets referenced on any other show?
Oh, absolutely not. But it will be a staple here till the day we're done. Bill.
Apparently, a listener reached out to him, and he wants to come on the show.
I'm sure he does.
You're not allowed on the show, my friend.
Also, at number 4 is A Bronx Tale.
He wants to rub elbows.
How's that on your list?
Rub elbows. I was too old. Rub elbows with... Actually, that's not true. I wasn't too old. But here's why it's not on my list. I'm going to come out and say it. It was on my list for a minute, but I did not heed its advice. Because my wife...
Oh, didn't do the lock.
Does not do the lock to this day. Doesn't do the lock. Now, it doesn't matter in the new car, but the old car that I just traded in, like I had to actually use a key. Like the keyless entry was gone. Like you couldn't even push the button on the passenger side to make the doors. So she would have to reach over like old school. And she would do it maybe once out of every 10 times. So if I had that on my list, I'd be like, I didn't follow my advice because I married that one. Now, I dated other girls who would have like opened the door for me while handing me a beer.
To drive them.
Not the one. Yeah. Not the one that I married, though. I married someone sensible.
Going from 4 to a 2-way tie for number 2, we have Chasing Amy, as well as Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Nope. I did not buy
them. I really wanted to like that movie so much more than I did.
I just didn't like their chemistry. I didn't care for them together. I know that I'm alone for the most part on this, but I'm like, why is Jim Carrey with the blue-haired girl? It makes no sense.
But weren't they just meeting or forgetting each other, though, during most of the movie?
I don't know. It didn't work for me, man. Yeah.
And the number 1 movie that was most influential to our listeners' relationships is High Fidelity.
How interesting. I could see that. It's a not as good version of Say Anything, but it's about relationships.
You know what I remember most about that movie is Tim Robbins. He is the most memorable thing in that movie.
With the ponytail?
Yeah. God, he's great.
The fantasy scene where he bashes his face. Yeah.
I didn't like that so much.
With the
phone. I don't like fantasy scenes. They're too convenient.
Really? It's kinda, top 5 fantasy scenes.
Don't like it.
I think we did that, actually.
No, we didn't.
Top 5 fantasy.
They're kind of manipulative.
They're very manipulative.
Manipulative.
How about you manipulate your gums?
they're exceptionally manipulative and convenient and... wouldn't it be fun?
TV does that a lot now, and I don't like it.
Buffalo 66 did it, and I forgive that. Because he did something cool in 3D with it, remember? Or 360.
Nope.
Oh, it's pretty sweet.
I was very close to putting Just Friends on the list.
You know what does it the most? Family Guy. Settle down with your Family Guy scenarios.
Kind of that's kind of its gimmick.
Defining characteristic.
Yeah. But that one like throws to those scenes, whereas a lot of TV shows will just play it out and mislead you to think that that's what happened, and then all of a sudden they woke up from a dream or something.
Just Friends, The Princess Bride, and would have enraged sure. No. Vanilla Sky, and of course, Back to the Future. Back to the Future, I learned a lot from.
Not even to bang your mom.
Exactly. That was lesson number one.
Like, that was on your list. You're gonna, and then you're like, oh, wait.
Thank you, Mr.
Did you come
Zemeckis.
Home and like have a long talk? Mom, can't bang anymore. Saw Back to the Future. Oh, she listens. I'm sorry,
say,
Mrs.
That's
Bish.
Really inappropriate.
So I apologize, Mrs. Bish. Right. Somewhere in Time is also on my list. Somewhere in Time.
I don't know what that is.
Christopher Reeve movie.
Oh. Doesn't help.
Had a huge influence on me as a child.
Really?
Yeah. He meets a woman because he learns how to go back in time. But then Pennies fuck him, Brian. Pennies. For those of you who know what I'm talking about, who've seen the movie, Somewhere in Time, a really, really good movie. It has a cult following. People still get together at the hotel where it took place.
Really?
Once a year, I think.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Hmm. Somewhere in Time. Really good movie. I'm going to put that on the list of movies you should see.
God damn it.
One of the greatest romance movies you ever. I was like a 9-year-old kid and I used to watch this thing tear up.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
you were a pab then?
I'm like, Superman's so sad.
Do his tears burn?
Oh, Somewhere in Time. Good one.
All right. Let's gamble.
All right. Last week you gambled on Atomic Blonde. At the time, the Rotten Tomato score was 77%.
Shit.
Anderson bid 81 and Brian 88. Currently, the week after its release, the Rotten Tomato score for Atomic Blonde has gone down to 76%, making Anderson the winner.
Great. Ooh,
good news for you, buddy.
Have you thought of a movie?
Somewhere in Time.
Okay, great. I'm actually looking forward to it. I like a good romantic movie.
You should enjoy it. Let me see. Let me make sure. I got a list. I got a list.
This is an inspired choice. It just came up.
No. I was about to add it to my list. Yeah, you don't want to see Begotten.
No.
You're gonna enjoy Begotten's coming your way.
Far from it.
Next time you like show
Easy,
me.
Logan.
Send me like Just Friends 2 or something.
Just Friends.
Begotten will be.
Just Friends 2, still friends.
Easy, okay. Our equipment is burning up. All right, let's end this bitch.
All right, this week you're going to be gambling on Detroit.
Somewhere in Time?
Somewhere in Time. And don't come back and then be clever with Somewhere Before Time or some shit.
The Land Before Time?
Yeah, don't do that. Somewhere in Time. 1980. Christopher Reeve.
$3?
Jane Seymour. That's probably for the SD as well. You got to get the HD.
Can do. All right, what are you gambling on? Detroit?
Detroit.
Somewhere in Time, Brian. Somewhere in Time.
Do I go with my gimmick? 6 weeks in a row going 88 was lost every week. Anderson?
Yeah. Yes?
I think I gotta go.
Alexei Morozov. All right, let's go.
I gotta go higher. 93.
94, fuck.
Ooh. If it's 93 and a half, we tie.
Some good math, Brian. Well done.
At the time, the week before its release with 73 reviews, Detroit has a Rotten Tomato score of
88.
96%.
Ooh.
So we go either way. How many reviews?
73. I was kind of hoping that you would do Dark Tower.
Yeah, I'm curious.
Dark Tower
is,
has not been made available to the old critics.
No Rotten Tomato score yet.
That's a bad.
Do you want to gamble on it?
Bad.
Especially for something they were hoping to make a whole franchise out of with like 6 books or something.
Yeah.
Do you want to gamble on that for fun?
Oh.
There's no score.
What do you mean for fun? Like instead of in lieu of Detroit?
No, it's for fun. Just maybe a little side bet or just.
What's a side bet?
I don't know.
No, I thought you were trying to replace it. Like I'm not dumb. Like oh sure, let's do that. When I'm in a great place.
No,
it's like I got two kings still
position.
To me.
You got pole position.
All right.
You got pocket kings.
I got pocket kings.
Yeah,
that's what I was searching for.
I'm sitting on a jack queen.
I like my kings already.
Most people do, but I'm diversified.
Yeah, Brian. Chance of you getting a straight or slim. Me getting one more king? Oh, 3 kings. All right. What do we got here? What are we doing?
Thanks to... Oh, hold on. I deleted the thing by accident. Thanks to...
Hey, I got a bone to pick with you, Brian.
With me?
Yeah.
I put it on pause.
And I apologize to the listener because I don't want to fuck up the name and I don't have notes in front of me or anything. But
to Jenny and Grant? I'm sorry.
Not Jenny and Grant. But one of the chats with Andy, a listener, really fun conversation. I think I know who it was, but I don't want to fuck up the name, so I'm not going to say it. But anyways, I don't want to sell him out. But he met you at one of Corolla's live shows. Mm-hmm. He told me about a year ago in St. Louis.
Okay.
It was. And he waited. The story that he told me made me so gross, sick and grossed out. But he waited in line. He had your book. You're going to sign the book, right?
Nice.
That was when Shrinkage first came out. The idea of people waiting in line to meet you just makes me so angry. Anyway, he gets up to the front of the line and is finally in front of Brian, right, Baldy, and he says, "Yeah, Brian," and you're just completely confused, and you're like, "What's your favorite drop?" And he was like, drop? No, I was trying to make a connection about the film vault here, and you just kind of skipped right to drops. Like, your head gets so immersed with the Corolla show, like, even, you know, the idea of the film vault is just completely out of your head. So he never even made any mention of it, and he kind of just got you to sign the book and took off.
What's his name? Oh, you don't know his name? I feel bad.
He was trying to make a film vault connection.
I realize that now.
I think you're so in the Corolla world.
I may have been in the mindset because I was at a live show for the Corolla, but I can think of any number of excuses, quote unquote. Maybe it was loud. Maybe he was drinking. Maybe I was drinking. Who knows? All the horrible things that you say about me and claim about me are true to varying degrees.
Yes.
But I really hope you know that I try to be as gracious as possible.
Oh, I can imagine you'd be gracious.
Yeah, to anyone, especially
that's not what I'm saying.
One of my books.
It's not a matter of
I
not
may
being
have been
gracious.
Confused.
It's a matter of you not even thinking the film vault. Hey, it goes back to my point.
What
was the last time the film vault got any kind of mention over there on the Corolla show?
I said today I host a movie show.
Yeah. Oh, no, wow, did you?
I didn't say that.
Why would the film vault never get any mentions?
It gets mentioned once in a while. People can tell Anderson on which social media, which you don't check. I mention him once in a while.
Do you?
I think it was actually recently I said on the film vault, we just talked about, I've heard what it was.
Dunkirk and how good it was.
No, because I talked about Dunkirk before I talked about it here.
All right.
Damn it. I forgot what it was.
Chats with Andy still available. I'll tell you with the real Brian what he really looks like and acts like and talks like behind. Talks kind of like this as soon as the mics go off.
Thanks to Eric F. for the fan art this week.
Do you have access to that episode, Brian?
No, I might actually. I think I have them all somewhere.
Logan, do you have it?
Yeah, send it to me.
Look at the bottom quote.
What is it? Okay, so it's Meet the Film Vault instead of Meet the Fockers. Or
yeah,
Meet the Parents.
It's Meet the Parents.
Not hilarious, impossible to laugh.
With exclamation points.
Well, how is that a play on?
Probably the actual quote from the poster. Hilarious. Apostle on Plow.
Oh, okay. That's probably what it was. And they just kind of reversed the words.
Thanks, Eric, for doing that.
Eric is very rude.
AndersonandBrian.com. Yeah,
hey,
not fun.
Where's Smug Life, huh?
You know, we have to do that.
Still waiting for the Smug Life tattoo.
With the well-built Brian?
With the Brian, with the dad paunch and the smug, the M-U-G is all like stretched out. I need the Smug Life. I need to see the picture
thanks
of Brian's
Smug
Life.
Artist this week.
Wait, hold on. Logan's flipping furiously through something. Oh, what? What is that?
Pretty good preview.
He's well built.
I like that.
What's going on?
I guess
they're going for irony.
Thanks to Marvin Falls, Jay Lupp alumni, and Ben Yonda for being our featured artist this week. Check us out.
Nice. But it's got to be on the belly, guys. It's got to be on the belly, and it's got to be stretched out.
Why are you criticizing
get like a
free fan art?
Find a like a hairy pregnant woman and use that
body. Wow, that is upsetting and impossible. Thanks. Check us out on the Film Vault, Twitter and Facebook both. If you want to suggest top five or vote, we like your votes, we like your suggestions. Next week, we'll probably use another listener suggestion, yay?
I believe so. And until then, we do it for Van Gogh.